Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Alrighty, hour number two, coming to you live for the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience on this Friday around the country. We got you two more hours, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM Channel 206, and a brief respite from the hoops. We'll get back to it, don't worry, all the fallout from the NBA draft, and obviously free agency's coming, but I love this guy. I have been a fan, although his team did take out my team back in 81. It's the first World Series I really truly remember when the Dodgers beat the Yankees, but I moved past that because he's a great baseball man. He's treated you and I very well. He's come on the show quite a bit during all these years managing the Angels, and now he's doing some different things, still involved in the game, but one of the good guys and a great man. I think a future Hall of Famer. Mike Socia is with us here on the show. Skip, how you doing today, bud?
I'm good, guys. Out here in Compton, California, with some high energy young kids, it's beautiful.
Yeah, you know, Skip, tell us about this breakthrough series that you're working on out in Compton. I'm going to assume a lot of the kids are minorities, which I think is great. But what are you guys doing with these high school kids?
Well, they're all baseball players. That's what's important. We've got a great. Just a great group of coaches out here, Eric Davis and Jerry Manuel and Chris Quinn and guys that, been in the game for a long time and understand the game and just trying to get these kids, they all range from like 15 to 18 years old. They love the game of baseball. They're high energy, they're athletic. And what we're trying to do is just point them in the right direction about some of the fundamentals and things that can help them to reach their potential. But it's really exciting for me not to, the major leagues are great and I haven't been down at this level before. But just to see the passion these kids have and how much they want to ask questions and soak up energy. And it's fun.
Back to your roots, Mike. I mean, that's how you started. That's how anybody who made
Absolutely.
It. That's how Tiki started.
No doubt. As we talked about, we never had these opportunities. When I graduated high school in 1976, so guys, I'm a dinosaur. but we never had opportunities like this, and you would have loved to have it.
And
I was talking with Eric Davis, and Eric saying if he had this, he grew up in L.A., and if he had this, he'd be at this field every day. He said, "I'll just cut the grass just to be able to come out here, and if you let me play." And
love it.
These kids understand the opportunity they have. There's probably 60 young athletes out here that are trying to. Get their way into Division I baseball or the draft. Just make themselves the best baseball players they can, and it's a lot of fun, guys. I can't tell you how much fun it is.
It sounds it. We could tell the genuine enthusiasm in your voice. And I wanted to ask you this here, Mike. I think before we get to some issues in the modern game now, and even reflect a little bit more on your great career. 13 years as a player, almost 20 years as a skipper. You won a World Series, couple of Manager of the Year award. You've done it all. My little guy's four. We have a lot of parents that listen to the show with little boys and little girls, baseball and softball, or in both. And I think I'm doing it right because I played a lot of baseball. But I want to know if I'm missing anything here. With my little guy, I thought the most important thing, number one, make it fun. You got to make it fun. If you're not, you're doing the wrong thing. But from a sporting point of view, is to focus on his hand-eye. Short hops, spin the ball. Eventually he'll run, and if he's blessed with a good arm, and I think he is, but we'll find out. But I believe the best way to introduce a young kid to the sport of baseball is to learn to train the eyes. Am I on the right path here? If not, correct me.
Yeah, you're totally on the right path, and it's all the hand-eye coordination. I can go back to when I was a kid, and kids I played with, a lot of times you just go – in your backyard against the back of your house at a wall and against your driveway, not even dirt on concrete, growing up, back east, and you would just throw the ball against the wall, work on your fielding, work on your short hops, work on your hand-eye coordination, and just picking up a wiffle ball and hitting it. I can remember doing that when I was 5 years old with nobody, you doing it.
Self-hitting.
Yeah, all this stuff's important, and I think as a dad, the biggest lesson you're going to have to learn is get out of the way. I think that as dads, we want to really get into our kids' lives, and I went through the same thing. We have to get out of the way and let them play, and just let them enjoy the sport of baseball and the lessons you get for baseball. And God forbid you have another thing, a travesty like you had happen in Colorado this week, where you know you're talking about people yelling at a 13-year-old umpiring.
Yeah, we talked about that.
That's not what this whole experience is about. So you're right about making it fun. Baseball is a tough game to coach and to practice. And I know from experience that a lot of practices my son was in, that they go for 3 hours, and they're high-level kids, but they lose the interest. I don't know what you could do for 3 hours. With the Angels, we were 2.5 hours of spring training, high energy, got all our fundamentals in, and these guys were ready to go, and then they're done, and they're on to their extra work or whatever.
Yeah.
So if you're teaching your kids, you'll probably be involved as a coach in your son's little league.
I'm doing it now. I'm coaching tomorrow, Mike.
Good. You got to get high energy drills to keep the kids moving, and let the kids. And it shouldn't take more than an hour and 15 minutes for a baseball practice at that age.
Good stuff.
Let them come back wanting more. And now you're going to start to compete with basketball and with football and hockey and the natural speed of those games that the practice brings, where these kids are moving around. You have to infuse that into a baseball practice. So you've got to get around the horn drills going, cut off of relay drills, all-star relay drills, get some stations going. Get these kids moving so they understand the game and they'll start to gravitate towards the game, instead of having a three-hour practice where these kids are just you lose them after 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
that was phenomenal. That was very well done, Mike.
BT will take notes and actually do exactly that
tomorrow.
Skip.
Tiki, you're going to have to police this because you're probably around him a little more to make sure that he's
exactly. He's not going overboard yelling for
all
no reason.
All good intentions, Skip. All good intentions.
My advice: don't yell for no reason. Skip, let me ask you a hypothetical question. You won't have this issue with the Angels, but the Tampa Bay Rays have this issue. If ownership came to you and said, you know what, you're going to play half your games down in L.A. and the other half you're going to play up in Montana. What would you say? Like, is this feasible, the thought about playing half in St. Pete, the Tampa area, but St. Pete Peninsula, and then up in Montreal, Canada? Is that as wacky to you as it seems to us?
Well, first of all, as a manager, it's like, okay, wherever there's a game, we'll have the guys ready to play. That's your attitude. So if it came to that where you're playing half in one city and half in another city, so be it. It's obviously not ideal. But from the management perspective, I think you, or manager's perspective, I should say, and the coach's perspective, it's like, all right, guys, let's go, man. Let's get ready to play. Strap them up and play. From a fan's perspective, obviously it's a little bit different. I don't know. I haven't heard how far along the progress is of maybe that happening. Maybe you guys have a little more info than I do. But logistically, it'd be problematic at very least.
Yeah.
But like I said, from our end of it, as far as getting the guys ready and what you need to do, keep it focused. Hey, wherever there's a game, we have to get the guys ready.
Yeah, it's a unique plan. But to actually do that is what I said yesterday. I'm talking to Mike Socha, of course, here on Tiki and Tierney. I said, what happens if the Rays win 104 games, whether it's 5 years from now or 10, and this is their plan, and it's not a one-game wild card? What, are you going to play two games at the Trop, two games in Montreal? It's wacky, but it's a step in the right direction to solve a serious issue, but I don't really see it come to fruition. It seems like a little bit too wacky. I did want to ask you this. I've never asked you this, because we've always talked about your team, the Angels, Trout, your team, pitching, what's going on. When you were playing, you came up when Fernando Valenzuela was coming up. And if you're old enough, that was 81, I think, when he came up. If you're old enough to strike season, to remember Fernando Mania with that nasty screwball. Usually we ask former players, if you were a hitter, if you were a position player, who was the toughest guy you ever faced in the batter's box? But I want to ask you, who was the toughest guy to catch? Because I think you might say Fernando with the screwball, but maybe not. Who was the toughest guy you ever caught?
Well, I'm glad you're not asking me the batter's box, because then I have a laundry.
I hear you.
300 guys. That was a challenge. But as far as catching, Fernando was very easy to catch.
It was.
Fernando had such unbelievable control and command where, he could hit that outside corner, move it out 3 inches, move it out 3 more inches. Just uncanny command. He had the best stuff of any pitcher that I caught. There's no doubt about it.
Wow. Better than Hershiser?
Yes, because he had more pitch selection than Oral. But what Oral did I don't know if anybody did it better than Oral. He had that heavy sinker that wasn't – it was an inconsistent break. Sometimes it went straight down, sometimes it tailed.
Mm.
Uncanny movement on the ball with Oral, and he spun that ball incredibly well with an unbelievable breaking ball. He could move his sinker on both sides of the plate, had great command. He was a little tougher – he was tougher to catch than Fernando, definitely because of the unusual movement as far as the late movement. And what made it tough to hit also would make it tough to catch.
Mm.
Now, outside of a knuckleball pitcher and Tom Candiotti, it was like, you know, I'm trying to catch a
butterfly.
I had a tough time with that. Jerry Royce was tough because he had an erratic cutter, which made him tough to hit, but also tough to catch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all these things, but if you're going to Fernando, I don't know if I've ever seen a young pitcher come on the scene and dominate the way Fernando did. All the way through, not only through a season to get to the playoffs, but all the way through the playoffs and in the World Series, and it was just an incredible thing to be part of.
Yeah. Now, Skip, let's jump back real quick before we let you go here with the Angels. Brad Ausmus has taken over. They're sitting at 500, 38-38 on the season. Some things to deal with the pitching staff a little bit. Simmons has been hurt. Shohei Ohtani is just back a couple weeks, few weeks now. How do you assess or rate the job that Brad Ausmus is doing, obviously in your stead now as the skip of the Angels?
Well, I really like Brad. First of all, he's got great baseball instincts, and I thought he's going to be good. What's happening this year is kind of a rollover of where the organization was the last two or three years that we finished up there. The pitching is always an issue, and pitching is an issue with the Angels right now. They got a really dynamic offense, a deep offense with some great offensive players that are going to make some noise down the stretch. But the long and short of it is, if you're going to get to the playoffs, you're going to compete and contend. You need to pitch, and they're trying to make strides in that. They've got some young pitchers coming up, but that's what it's going to come down to. So until the pitching really gives these guys a chance to stay in games and swing the bats like they can, which they do have a really, really deep lineup. It's going to be tough for them to make the strides they need.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Mike, it was really good to have you back on. Hopefully, I know you're obviously very active. You have the diversity-focused breakthrough series out there in Compton, California. Roughly 60 high school baseball players and obviously getting instruction. You mentioned Eric Davis, who was a masher. He could run as well. I mean, he made some sick plays in the outfield yourself.
Oh, great player.
Yeah, he
great
was, player. Man. Although I remember when Ray Knight popped him at third base. Remember that? Remember that
no,
fight?
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, the Mets and the Reds had a fight. Ray Knight was a Golden Glove boxer. And Eric Davis slid into – it's on YouTube. Eric Davis slid in, and he started talking trash. Ray just dropped his rollings, and he started popping them. It was a big-time fight.
Oh, my gosh.
But listen –
I'll tell you, he might be a Golden Glove, but I might take ED in that one. ED's a stud, man.
Yeah,
I hear you. Well, man, you've done it all. And just congratulations on an amazing career, classy career, 13 years as a player, a couple of the championships with the Dodgers, one in the top step of the dugout with the Angels back in 2002, a million wins, basically, a lot of hardware. And as I said, I want to reinforce this, a lot of class. You were always good to us. And we miss you around the game, but we're happy that you're doing well.
No, I'm great, guys. This is really fun doing this part of it, and I can't tell how much I'm enjoying it, but nice talking to you guys, and thanks a lot.
Be good, Skip. All right, there it is. It's a great program. I mean,
yeah, sounds like it.
You want to talk about, you know, introducing the game to minorities and cultivating the game within communities where baseball's kind of been abandoned.
Yeah.
It's a great place to start.
I agree.
I mean, because they had some players come. Darryl Strawberry,
Eric Davis. There's some athletes there.
Oh, yeah.
Getting playing baseball.
That's why I say it's a good place to start. It's a good place to start for sure. It's great. Great endeavor. Love Socia. All right. How do you say his name? I read him. How do you say his name again? Zilgit. That's right. So we got Jeff Zilgit coming up next. We'll get back to the hoops. I said a little respite from the NBA draft and everything around that. We'll get right back to it now. Good chat with Socia. Zilgit next on the NBA. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Quick way to save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. Just love Mike Socia. Just a throwback, good guy, terrific manager. and doing a great thing. That seems like a really good project. But right now, we get back to the hoops. We're joined by Jeff Zilgit, NBA reporter, USA Today. Obviously, a lot of angles to hit. Jeff, welcome to Tiki and Tierney. How are you today?
Hey, I'm well. Hope you guys are the same.
Yeah, we are. Jeff, I woke up this morning, read the USA Today, and we actually started our show with one of the opinions of one of your colleagues, Andy Nesbitt, who wrote about the NBA being should be embarrassed about the wrong hats. Look, my guy DeAndre Hunter got drafted. I knew it was the Hawks. He had a Lakers hat. I was like, what the heck is going on?
It's a clown show.
I mean, it's kind of crazy that they're still doing it this way, even though we all know what's going on. You think they're ever going to change this? Because we think they should and need to.
Well, look, if they don't, if the trade isn't official until July 6th, let's look at it this way. There's a simple fix to this. Have him go up there, the player, and wear a generic blue NBA hat with the logo, or red, with the NBA logo on it, and that just erases the whole problem. We all, as you mentioned, we all know what's going on with the trades and the fact that they're going to make the number four pick put on a Lakers hat that went to New Orleans, that went to Atlanta. It's just silly on lots of different levels.
Yeah, it really is. It's confusing. Right? You almost forget where guys are. I mean, another guy from Virginia that got drafted, Ty Jerome, I thought he was at the 76ers. I kind of like an hour and 2 hours later, I'm like, oh, wait, he's not there. He's out in Sacramento. So I think it just changed. Not Sacramento. Where did he end up? Phoenix. It gets confusing that's for the lay watcher of the draft, if that makes any sense.
Well, it is. And how about this? It's even confusing for those of us in-house trying to keep track of the trades as they're going. You know, and then you sometimes forget that earlier in the day, Minnesota is making a trade with Phoenix for the number 11 and number 6 picks that included Dario Saric. I just think it's best on our draft tracker. We just tried to list the team that the player is actually going to start his career with.
That's smart. That's the way to do it. We're talking to Jeff Zilgit with us here, NBA reporter, USA Today. And aside from, you know, just the unnecessary guessing with the hats that Tiki brought up, and I totally agree, it's a clown show. It's easy to fix. They also need, in my opinion, Jeff, they've got to tweak the calendar for the league here. It needs to be more rhythmic, and it needs to follow the model of the NFL, where it's free agency, you address that as a team, you attack that, and then maybe you supplement your team through the draft, not the other way around. Why can't they just have the draft and then the free agency followed by the draft rather than what they have now? I don't understand.
I think it's only because free agency is such a drawn-out process in the NBA, and not everything gets done in the first couple of days. Lots of things do get done in the first couple of days, but the way the Vegas Summer League or a couple other summer leagues that are happening to take place is they want to have the draft ready by July 1 so those players can play in that. I suppose you could do free agency, you know, this week, have the draft right around July 1 and then start the summer leagues.
Mm-hmm.
But just the way that calendar works right there, it does make it very difficult. But your point overall is one that has not lost our other executives, because it would help them out knowing let's tackle free agency first and get some of our needs through free agency that way. And then we have a better idea of what we want to do in the draft rather than the other way around. Now, that would take some tweaking, as you just mentioned, to the NBA calendar. But as it stands right now, unless they wanted to move back Summer League a couple weeks, which I don't think they do, they don't want that sort of stretching into late July, I'm not sure what the answer is.
Well, they're smart people. They'll figure it out if they're motivated to figure it out. All right, let's get a little player-specific, a little team-specific here. One of the things I said to Tiki, you know, I really like Colin Sexton, and I really like Darius Garland. I just don't know if I really liked him in the same backcourt. How influential, how much juice did Beeline actually have in this decision? And is this perhaps a precursor to another move to maybe reroute Colin Sexton? I like both players, but it strikes me as odd. What was their thinking there?
So, one, this was Kobe Altman, the general manager, his decision. When Beeline took the job, he wants to know who's going to be on his team, but he didn't want to be one of these coaches who was heavily involved in every step of the way of dictating who is on his roster. He just wants to coach. And the one thing he can do, which he's done at every stop along the way, is he's been masterful at developing young talent. And so if you maybe want to use the the situation that is in Portland with C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard.
Okay.
That's the kind of two-guard lineup that they might be looking at.
Right.
Now, to the other part of your question, could it potentially, if it doesn't work out as a two-guard backcourt, that the very dynamic players, and then, yes, you could see the idea of one of them being moved. But it was very clear what they were trying to do right there. And then, you know, also getting some shooting with Dylan Windler from Belmont and Nikhil Alexander Walker from Virginia Tech as well. And so you sort of see how they're trying to develop that team. I don't think Cleveland is ultimately done making moves. At one point, I think Kevin Love is going to be on the move as well to get some future draft picks for him, send him to a playoff team, and then they can continue that rebuild.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff Zilgut is with us here from the USA Today.
Hey, Jeff, when you listen to David Griffin's done a masterful job with the Anthony Davis trade and getting the three players from the Lakers and then three first-round draft picks. Then he moved out of the number four and got two extra draft picks. You feel like he's got a plan, but he also said Zion Williamson is not here to save the New Orleans Pelicans. Can that be a little bit informative of why he's stocking draft picks? They got so much young talent on this squad right now. It's mind-boggling to think about in a sense.
I think they're looking at the long term. They want to bring this along. Let's just look at maybe the Philadelphia 76ers model, where they had all those draft picks. Not everyone hits, but all you need is for a few of them to hit, whether it's a Ben Simmons, a Joel Embiid, those kinds of players. And so this is not going to be a quick fix. And that's why he's also saying that he doesn't want Zion to feel all the pressure to lead this team to the playoffs in his first season. He's surrounding him with some players. He's also going to need some veterans on that team. I know they still have Jrue Holiday, but the problem, I use that Philadelphia example during the Sam Hinkie process, early era of that, is they didn't have veterans in the locker room who could share what it's like to be a long-term professional, what's required on the day-to-day. And so I think he's just going to take his time with this. I agree with what you just said, Tiki. Fantastic job early on. And he's starting to just lay out the sort of the foundation for what could be. If you look at these draft picks and the rookie contracts and the value of that, we're looking at a franchise that that's built for the next 7 to 10 years, one way or another. And so I don't think there's an immediate rush to have all this pressure right now.
Hey, Jeff, by the way, are you absolutely married to the notion that Zion Williamson is undeniably, he emerges 10, 12, 15 years down the road as undeniably the best player from this draft? Or do you have maybe a dissenting voice on that?
No, I don't have a dissenting voice just yet. I mean, just the dynamic capabilities that he has, it stands out more than any other player. I think some things that he does are even underrated, such as ability to push the basketball after a rebound, his ball handling skills, and his passing skills. Everyone in the college level, they were trying to stop him. He's going to have other players on his team who could do some things at the pro level. And I think he's going to have even a little bit more freedom to do some things offensively that he wasn't able to do in college. Now, can I sit here and tell you with certainty? No, but there was a reason. I give David Griffin a lot of credit. He gets no credit for picking Zion Williamson.
Yeah,
three of us, we're going to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I could have done that one. Last one before we let you go here, Jeff. Bol Bol, we thought he was falling a little bit, but to 44, I mean, that's precipitous. Is there any reason that we don't publicly know about?
No, not yet. I sent out some texts last night, and there was obviously everyone knows about his foot surgery, but there was no dramatic red flag that sometimes appears on a guy's medical records or anything like that. And so a couple of things that, you started to see some anonymous people come out with some statements about they just weren't sure about his desire to be a great basketball player, that his drive, that kind of thing. But where he fell certainly gives him some motivation to prove everyone wrong. And so I don't think that there was, from everything I've been told so far, not a medical red flag, and that they just weren't sold on taking him in the first round. Now, ultimately he ends up in Denver, they may end up with first-round talent if that comes through, and that will end up being a fantastic pick for them.
Hey, Jeff, give me 15 seconds. My guy Shamori Ponce from St. John's, is he going to stick with the Rockets? Does he make it?
I think he makes it in the league somewhere. I'm not sure about the Rockets. Real quick, this was a guy who was on draft boards all season long, so the talent is there. Yep. He'll find a team.
Good stuff, Jeff. Good conversation. Jeff Zilgit, NBA reporter, USA Today. We know you've been hustling. Thanks for some time, buddy. Appreciate it.
Hey, perfect. You guys have a good rest of the afternoon.
Be good.
Right back to you, Jeff. Good job. Coming up next, we've got the update from John Fast. But football at the 40s. Look at this, man. A little something from Von Miller. Mm. You know, this part caught my attention. The NFL MVP odds. That always catches my attention. A little something on Matty Ice, Matt Ryan, Deshaun Watson. This is a big time. This is a platinum football at the 40s after John Fass's update, which is right now. Here's John. All right, Teak. Been very busy this commercial break. What have you been doing over there?
I'm looking at the
odds.
That's
been down for the last four minutes.
I'm looking at the
writing,
odds.
Studying.
Looking
what
at
are
the
you
odds.
Doing?
I'm looking at the odds.
The odds
NFL
for?
MVP odds. If Tom Brady's going
to
win one again, he's going to have to earn it.
He's not going to win one this year.
I think you're right. But if he does, he's going to earn it.
Yeah. Okay. So you did study these.
I did this.
Okay.
I studied just what's around some of these guys.
I might have a dark horse for you too. We'll get to this in a second. Right. Football at the 40s coming up here on the show next hour. Get back to the NBA, but obviously we'll bridge the gap from the draft and really not that you and I haven't been doing this for weeks. You know, throwing out the possibilities for free agency, but now we can really start to hone in and maybe even circle back to that plan that I dropped on you yesterday that Windhorse reported about the Warriors maybe extending a 5-year max to Kevin Durant with the intention to have him rehab for the year and then trade him to the team of his choice, probably the Knicks. That's what most people surmise. So we'll get to that. But right now it's time for a little football at the 40s. It's a good one, too. Let's go, guys. Come on. All right, Tink, we start with Von Miller and the Denver Broncos. I mean, this is not really one of the sexier NFL stories, per se, but it's an interesting one. I think we're all curious what Joe Flacco still has in the bag here. Where is he at physically? Does he kind of go through a little renaissance, maybe, you know, uplifted, different circumstances? Got a little tiresome, a little malaise, I think, at the end of his Ravens tenure here. So Von Miller said he's confident that Joe can get the Broncos back on track, saying, quote, this is the year he's going to be able to do everything that he wants to do. Maybe a little jab at the Ravens and maybe they held him back. But
maybe.
Where's Joe at?
He's got to fend off rookie Drew Locke. He doesn't have to, really. Drew's got some learning to do. Yep. We detailed this around the NFL draft. Good player, Drew Locke, but he's got to get a little bit less cavalier with some of his tosses. Can he? I think he's surrounded by some really good talent out there in Denver, and it's young, but it's developed. Phillip Lindsay, who surprised the hell out of everybody, a little short running back out of Colorado.
Yep.
Or Colorado.
Colorado State,
who nobody knew about
until
he burst on the scene, earned his way, like truly earned his way to the starting position by the end of the year. Cortland Sutton's a good player.
Yeah,
they just drafted
SMU.
Noah Fant from Iowa, who was one of the top tight ends. There's talent around.
There is some talent right
there. There's talent around him.
Yeah.
So I think Von Miller's right. I mean, Joe Flacco doesn't have to be a hero. Right, it's not like when he was in Baltimore, and you know, with all due respect to Baltimore, they gave him so much money they couldn't put any good talent around him. Right, so there's talent here for him. So if he doesn't have to do it all, I think he could have a really good season. If this defense can get back to where they were a couple years ago, they might be a surprise team. It's not their division at all, but they might be a surprise team.
Well, I mean, just think about, you know, Joe has taken some unnecessary shots in the court of public opinion.
I agree.
Joe Flacco's won a lot of football games, you know, 11-5, 9-7, 12-4, 12-4, 10-6, 8-8, 10-6. All right, 3-7 a couple of years back, 8-8, 9-7, and 4-5. But you compare that to the roller coaster Eli Manning's been on for the last 5 years for the Giants. I mean, yeah, Joe Flacco, there was a perceptible dip in his performance for sure. But Joe Flacco's a winner. He's got a big arm. He's a quiet leader. He's tough. He's usually pretty healthy outside of the knee injury the one time. So I'm curious. He's not a star, but I think Joe stabilizes the position. They needed that to be stabilized, too. It just wasn't working.
They were bad. They're bad.
Trevor Siemian, is he painting somewhere on the corner in France? He looks like a painter.
You're thinking of Trevor Siemian.
Yeah, Trevor Siemian. No, not Trevor Siemian. Paxton Lynch.
Paxton Lynch, who beat out.
His name is Paxton Lynch. Yeah. Doesn't look like a quarterback.
No, he doesn't.
And he doesn't play like one either.
Yeah. He didn't love it.
NFL MVP odds release. Here we go. Get your money here. Get your point spreads here.
Yeah.
Here they are.
No.
You want to take this?
No, go ahead.
Okay, but I'll give them out, and then we'll both bang around what we have to do here.
All quarterbacks, Mahomes, by the way.
Patrick Mahomes.
All quarterbacks, by the way.
Of course. Plus 350. So that means if you if you lay $100 and Patrick wins and you bet on him to win, you bet $100, you win $350. You bet $200, you win $700. It keeps going on and on. Carson Wentz is plus $550. Andrew Luck is plus $600. First of all, that's the first thing that catches my eye.
Yeah,
put money on Andrew Luck
just for the hell of it.
No doubt,
burn $100 to win $600 because that could happen.
You know, listen, I'm going to have to make a prediction. Let me give you the rest of the odds. Brady plus 700, not happening. Phillip Rivers plus 700, not happening. Aaron Rodgers, yeah, you could take a flyer on that, plus 800, probably not happening.
Matt LaFleur, Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah. I said the Raptors in six at plus 1,000. And some of you heated my, because I was on vacation. People hit me up, oh, thanks for the tip. I want some money. Put $100 on it. If you bet. Put $100 as a future on Andrew Luck at plus 600. That will treat you well.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Free
it's,
money.
Look, it's interesting because he does last year with just a couple of good offensive skill position players. They were able. Marlon Mack came on as a running back, so he's going to be even better this year. T.Y. Hilton was he was hurt.
He was hurt for a little bit,
but then he came back and he was strong.
Beast.
He's going to be a beast. They drafted this kid Paris Campbell from Ohio State, who's a blazer.
Yep.
So they have all this diversity.
All the levels are
Jack
actually
Doyle,
taken care
the
of.
Tight end.
Tight end.
I mean, they got all the pieces you can need. Andrew Luck's the one that jumps out. I mentioned Tom Brady. He's going to have to earn it, right? He really is. I mean, I know I love what they like do, but there's an exodus in their coaching staff, so there's going to be some interesting movement. The one that it really is interesting to me is Carson Wentz, right? Mm-hmm. Carson Wentz at plus 550. I would, off the top of my head, I said, why is he two? I mean, there's no way. But DeSean Jackson's back there,
mm-hmm.
right? D-Jack. Nelson Aguilar had 65 catches last year. Alshon Jeffrey had 64. Zach Ertz had like 110. All those guys are back. They drafted a kid, Miles Sanders from Penn State, who everybody loves, running back who filled in for who backed up Saquon Barkley. Jordan Howard they got in free agency. There's a ton of skill position players on this Philadelphia Eagles team, and if they get back to what they did when they won the Super Bowl, which is pound the football and then have big targets at wide receiver to take advantage in the red zone. Carson Wentz, if he stays healthy, he could be a play as well.
I'd like to see what Russell Wilson's – I didn't come across this. What was Russell Wilson's odds? Connor, you have that? What was Russ?
I'm checking now. I'll get right to you.
Gotcha. Yeah, we'll can transition. Yeah, whatever you find,
that's
it. Tell me.
That's one you always got to keep an eye on. That's a surprising one that he's not – one of the top. I'd say Russell has a better chance of winning the MVP than Aaron Rodgers with a new coaching staff that they're battling with and Nathaniel Hackett.
Well, Baldwin's gone now. He retired, right?
Yeah,
Baldwin's
exactly.
hurt.
Exactly.
So that actually doesn't hurt. I mean, that's
true.
That doesn't
true.
Help Russell.
But it's Davante Adams who we like.
Yep.
Geronimo Allison, who he may turn into a player, maybe. Who knows?
What about Khalil Mack? I mean, you got to throw some defensive player there just in case for a good team.
They just never win.
I hear you. I know, but again, it's. I agree. I mean, that's almost wasted money. True. We plus 900. Russell Wilson's plus 900. Wow. I mean, that
actually might be the smart
play. Same as Baker Mayfield. See, that's just disrespectful. Even in the
I agree.
The future odds for MVP, he gets overlooked and marginalized.
Are you surprised though? Like, we always do it. Not us.
I'm a little surprised that he's behind Baker or the same as Baker. That doesn't add. I mean, I like Baker.
Because Baker's not winning the MVP.
I mean, I wouldn't think so.
No.
You never know. But
not
that's
a second year. No,
right.
It's not happening.
All right. Matty Ice. Matt Ryan. I guess I could see this. Said he's not overly concerned with Julio Jones skipping the Falcon workouts. Every year we go through this. It's not a big deal,
look,
is it?
Julio Jones wants to be paid as the top wide receiver in football. He signed a deal 3 years ago. All the other top guys moved past him. He deserves it, but you can't keep holding the team hostage. You saw this with the New York Jets when Darrell Revis did this to you guys every year.
Every
I want more.
Year.
I deserve more. What, that guy's got more than me? No, I want more. So they shouldn't be concerned. They did. They had the same exact issue last year. They put a temporary fix by giving him a short-term raise.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to work this year. They're going to have to figure out a long-term solution for it. But it sucks that he's not around in the offseason, and I hope he doesn't miss any of training camp either.
All right, let's get to the rules aspect here. Former NFL Senior VP of Officiating Dean Blandino on the new PI said, quote, creating a rule because of one bad play leads to bad rules. On the surface, I don't agree with that.
No.
How do you interpret that statement?
I don't agree with that at all. I mean,
I'm more concerned with Gene Steratore says, by the
way. Yeah, true. He's our guy.
Give me a quote from Gene. Not only is he our guy, he's the best.
Yeah.
In one year, he became the best.
All they did was just make what people and coaches and I guess the whole NFL world has been clamoring for a long time. Pass interference is, especially like down the field pass interference, is one of the most game-changing plays probably in the history of the game. Because you can throw up a football 70, 60-something yards. A good wide receiver can deke a defender into fouling him, and you got a 60-yard play.
Yeah.
It's the most punitive
penalty in all of sports.
All of sports. It's unfair.
I agree.
To put a little review on it, that's not a bad rule. And if it solves what happened in the NFC Championship game, then good. Yeah. Right? So I don't think it's a bad rule. I think Dean Blandino is off here.
Let's get two levels. I mean, if I'm Gordon Tekin, he's going to run a go route and he's going to burn me by 30 yards. But if I can
which will be intentional to your point.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so you've got to differentiate between something that is really a going for the ball. And that's whatever the spot foul is. That's what I would like to see. But if you just, you know, if you bite inside and I bite with you and then you go back outside, I'm holding my jock and you're wide open and I grab you. You know, there's got to be differentiating.
I agree.
I think rules and interpretations of PI. So, listen, it's a hard game to officiate. They're big, they're strong, they're fast. There's 22 guys on the field at once. There's boundaries. I mean, people are screaming. I'm not saying it's an easy job, but I do not agree at all with his premise that creating a rule because of one bad play leads to bad rules. I totally disagree with that.
Yeah, because there were many bad plays.
True.
Many.
Deshaun Watson. We all love watching Deshaun play, going back to his Clemson days. Now, Deshaun said he feels able to do things this year that he couldn't do last year based on the torn ACL, whether it was an actual physical limitation or learning to trust his body, that would enable his mind to go and do things he knew he could do but was afraid to do. If this means Deshaun Watson's going to be a little bit better this year, that is probably scary.
I got to tell you, what's even more scarier is if Will Fuller gets healthy, stays healthy. Remember, they didn't have him all of last year, right?
He's a touchdown machine.
Oh, my God. He's fast.
Ran a 4.34 at the combine.
DeAndre Hopkins with him. Lamar Miller still a really good player as coming out of the backfield. Deshaun Watson.
Their own line's terrible.
It's just terrible.
They drafted four, but it's terrible.
He was sacked. Wasn't he the most sacked? I think he was the most sacked quarterback
50
league
times maybe? Around there?
I think it was more than. I want to say it was
60, 70.
I want to say it was 60
car territory from the Texans?
It wasn't quite like 77. I think that was a David Carr one.
Carr was in the 70s.
It was 70-something. I don't think it was quite that, but he was hit a lot.
Let me see
if I can find the stat real quick.
What a disservice to a young quarterback. You've got to keep this young kid upright. You have to insulate him.
Yeah.
And they started to with the draft.
62 times he got sacked last year.
Not to mention all the pressures he avoids because of the speed.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. I don't know if you can exactly pinpoint this. By the way, we'll do NBA free agency coming up next, give you a good look into what awaits us here as basketball fans, but how many times do you think he actually runs into trouble? We always talk about the quarterbacks who can run away from trouble.
Yeah.
But sometimes speed gives you the confidence to do anything, and you run into trouble. You run into sacks.
You're right.
You think that's part of the problem with the Texans or no?
Sometimes, but it's because of the inferior line, as you talked about. Just for comparison's sake, Tom Brady, who never gets sacked, was sacked 21 times. He was sacked 41 more times than Tom Brady.
Like that every year.
And Tom Brady can't move.
He can't move at all.
That tells you how bad Houston Texans line was.
Oh, God. Hoops, free agency. Who's going where? Next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.